Mahabharata, Chapter 12. Dhritarashtra gives half the kingdom. As the kings left the Swayamvara for their respective countries, they marveled at what they had seen. The illustrious Pandavas were still alive. It was Arjuna who had shot down the target and won the princess, and it was Bhima who faced the kings with complete fearlessness and thrown down the mighty Shalya. The king censured Bhishma and Dhritarashtra for having allowed the Pandavas to be persecuted and deprived of their rightful kingdom. Duryodhan was depressed at this turn of events. As he made his way back to Hastinapur, he pondered on the situation. How had his cousins escaped the fire? Now they were more powerful than ever. Allied with Drupada and Krishna, they were a force to be reckoned with, and their own prowess was obviously exceptional. Just two brothers had successfully taken Draupadi from the midst of hundreds of kings. Even the invincible Karna had been more than matched. Hot tears ran down Duryodhan's cheeks. By his side, Dushasan had said consolingly, "Do not grieve, brother. It was only because the Pandavas disguised themselves that they managed to win Draupadi. They took us all by surprise. Clearly destiny is supreme, and human effort is useless. Despite our exertions, the Pandavas are alive and flourishing." Duryodhan frowned. "This is all the fault of the useless Parochan. He let us down badly. At least he perished in the fire." The Kauravas entered their capital sorrowful and ashamed. They were also anxious. Drupada was a powerful enemy. As Duryodhan entered his palace, he was met by Vidura. Hearing the news from Panchala, Vidura's face lit up with delight. Despite Duryodhan's machinations, the Pandavas were thriving. Surely the Lord was protecting those virtuous princes. Vidura went at once to Dhritarashtra and said, "By good fortune the Kurus have been successful and are prospering." The blind king replied joyfully, "What luck, what luck!" Not knowing that Vidura was referring to the Pandavas, he thought that perhaps Duryodhan had won Draupadi. He immediately ordered ornaments to be made for Draupadi and asked that she and Duryodhan be brought into the palace in great pomp. Then Vidura informed him of the facts. Draupadi had chosen the Pandavas for her lords, and now the five heroes were strongly allied with Drupada and his many relatives and friends. Dhritarashtra sat forward in surprise. "This is wonderful news. Those boys are dearer to me than they were to Pandu. My affection for them is now greater than it ever was. Their success and good fortune is mine also." Vidura smiled. "O king, may your present feelings remain for 100 summers." He then left to give the good news to Bhishma. The king was left alone with Duryodhan and Karna. Both had remained silent as Vidura had spoken, but as soon as he left, they jumped to their feet, loudly criticizing him. Clasping his sword in its ornate scabbard by his side, Duryodhan said, "O best of men, how are you considering good fortune to be our enemy's success? That is foolish. We need to weaken the Pandavas and deprive them of their fortune, not rejoice in it. Otherwise they will surely swallow us with all our kinsmen, armies, friends, and wealth." Karna growled in agreement, and both he and Duryodhan stood in front of the king waiting for his reply. Dhritarashtra was silent for some time. Finally, wringing his hands, he said, "I desire exactly as you desire. However, I did not want to reveal my feelings to Vidura. He should not even be able to know what I am thinking by my demeanor. Therefore, I praise the Pandavas in his presence." The king asked Duryodhan how he and Karna planned to handle the situation. The prince replied that they should employ every diplomatic and devious means to bring about the Pandavas' downfall. He suggested that spies be employed to create disunity between the five brothers, or that Drupada and his ministers be swayed from supporting the Pandavas by tempting them with wealth. Perhaps Draupadi could be turned against them if beautiful women were used to seduce the brothers. Or maybe Bhima could be secretly killed, He was the mainstay of the Pandavas' power, and without him they could easily be overpowered. Duryodhan concluded, "O Father, use whatever means you deem best. Somehow we must bring the Pandavas under our control without delay. Their strength increases with every passing day." The Kaurava prince turned to Karna and asked him for his opinion. Karna raised a clenched fist. His voice boomed out in reply, "O Duryodhan, in my view your suggestions are not well considered. I do not think any intrigues will succeed against the Pandavas. You have already tried and failed in this way on various occasions. It will surely fail again." Karna pointed out that the Pandavas had formerly been living near them in Hastinapur. They had been mere children without allies or friends, and still Duryodhan's scheming had not been successful. Now the brothers were grown up, had powerful allies, and most importantly, were on their guard against the Kauravas. They would detect and thwart any plan Duryodhan set in motion. Nor would the Kauravas be able to break Draupadi's affection for her husbands. She chose them when they appeared as poor Brahmins. How would she reject them now that they were prosperous? Nor would the virtuous Drupada abandon them for the sake of wealth, even if the Kauravas offered him their entire kingdom. Karna's eyes flashed as he spoke. His natural golden armor gleamed in the shafts of sunlight that shone through the palace windows. He turned to the king and continued, "O sire, here is what I think we should do. Before the brothers are fully established, let us strike them down on the battlefield. We must challenge them before Drupada has time to assemble his allies to fight alongside them, and before Krishna and Balaram can bring the mighty Yadava hosts from Mathura." Karna went on to praise strength and prowess as the cardinal virtues in Kshatriyas. He disliked Duryodhan and Shakuni's treacherous methods and would rather settle the issue in an honest trial of arms. That was the only noble way to tackle the Pandavas. The other three means of diplomacy, conciliation, bribery, or dissension, would all prove useless. The Kurus should immediately gather an army to march on Drupada's capital, crushing both him and the Pandavas at the same time. Then the world would be theirs to command, free of thorns. Dhritarashtra praised Karna for his courageous speech. Turning his blind eyes toward the king of Anga, he said, "Such words full of heroism and power surely befit you, O heroic one. But let us consult Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura before taking any action. These men will always counsel what is in our best interests." Dhritarashtra summoned his counselors. One by one, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and Vidura arrived and sat upon the golden seats around the king's throne. When they were all settled in their places, the king told them the views of both Duryodhan and Karna and asked for their opinions. Bhishma spoke first. "O Dhritarashtra, I can never consent to a quarrel with the Pandavas. Pandu's sons and your sons are equally dear to me. They deserve my protection equally. The Pandavas should be given half the kingdom. Of this there is no doubt. As much as you feel this kingdom to be your property, so do the Pandavas feel it to be theirs. If it is not their birthright, then how can it ever be yours? Indeed, their claim comes before yours. Therefore, conclude a treaty and hand over half the kingdom to them. Do this for your own good." Bhishma then explained what would happen if they declined to make peace with the Pandavas. The Kauravas would be covered with dishonor. All virtuous men would censure them. Having lost their reputation, their existence would become useless. Bhishma looked around the council chambers as he spoke. "It is fortunate for us that Kunti's sons are still alive. It is fortunate that Kunti herself still lives. And it is fortunate that the sinful Parochan met his end. From the day I heard that Kunti and her sons had perished in the fire, I could not face any living creature." Bhishma asked Dhritarashtra if he knew how the citizens felt. They had blamed the Pandavas' death on the king. That the brothers had survived would repair his reputation. Dhritarashtra should now take advantage of that good fortune and make amends with the Pandavas by awarding them their kingdom. They were virtuous, united, and ever protected by the Supreme Lord. Even Indra with all the gods could not deprive them of their rights. If you desire justice, the welfare of all, and my pleasure, then give half the kingdom to these boys. Bhishma sat down, looking across at Duryodhan, who breathed heavily and ground his teeth. The prince stared at the floor as Drona stood up to speak. O sire, it is said that counselors should always speak what is right, true, and conducive to the king's welfare and fame. My opinion, then, is the same as Bhishma's. Return the kingdom to the Pandavas. Send a messenger skilled in diplomacy to Drupada, along with many gifts, and tell him how the alliance of his house with the house of Kuru has enhanced your power and dignity. O king, this will undoubtedly be in your best interests. Drona advised that Drupada be told how happy both Dhritarashtra and his son have become by all that has happened. The Pandavas should be brought back in state to Hastinapur. They should then be installed in their paternal kingdom. This was the people's desire. The Pandavas are no less Dhritarashtra's sons than his own offspring. He should treat them equally. When Drona finished speaking, Karna sprang from his seat. He could take no more. Breathing heavily, his brow furrowed, he thundered, "How surprising that these two so-called ministers should tender such advice. Although you have supported them, O king, they do not look to your good. While concealing the wickedness in their hearts, they speak words purporting to be in your interests." Karna fumed. Bhishma and Drona's advice was useless. A man's happiness and distress depend upon destiny alone. Another person's acts could in no way affect anyone. Everything was fixed by fate. If in the course of destiny Dhritarashtra had acquired the throne, then who could oppose that? Why should they fear the Pandavas? Dhritarashtra had become king by fate's arrangement, and if fate decreed it, he would remain in that position, no matter what anyone said or did. Karna looked angrily at both Bhishma and Drona as he concluded his speech. These two have spoken out of fear or favoritism toward the Pandavas. O king, judge for yourself the motives of your ministers, then do what you feel is right. Dhritarashtra remained silent, but Drona again spoke out. Karna, you have spoken only out of envy of the Pandavas. Due to your attachment for Duryodhan, you desire only to injure the Pandavas. You should know that what I have said is certainly for the benefit of this house. If we act otherwise, then, in my opinion, the Kurus will be exterminated. Vidura had been observing the situation closely. Now it was his turn to speak. He could see by Dhritarashtra's demeanor and silence that he was uncertain. The intelligent minister stood and addressed the king. O sire, after careful consideration, I cannot think of anyone who are better friends to you than Bhishma and Drona. They have spoken what is for your certain good, but you do not accept their advice. The foolish Karna may disagree with them, but their words are meant only for your welfare. It has never been seen that they have given you bad advice at any time. They are experienced, wise, and learned in the scripture. Neither of them are in any way less than Rama, the great son of Dasarath. They regard your sons and the Pandavas with equal eyes. Why then do you disregard their counsel? Vidura then gave his own views of the situation. Dhritarashtra's partiality toward his own sons would lead to his downfall. The Pandavas were powerful, and they were fixed in virtue. They could not be overcome by force. Indeed, they were capable of withstanding even the gods in battle. Besides the mighty Jupiter, they had Krishna and Balaram as allies. There was no doubt that wherever there was Krishna, there would be victory. Standing before Dhritarashtra, Vidura spoke firmly. Wash away, O king, the stain of ill repute brought about by the incident at Varanavata. Please the citizens of the state. Do what is just and proper, and give to the Pandavas what is rightfully theirs. If you listen to the sinful advice of Duryodhan, Shakuni, and Karna, your kingdom and fortune will surely be annihilated. Dhritarashtra remained silent for some minutes. As much as he desired the advancement of his own sons over that of the Pandavas, he could not deny the truth of Vidura's words. Placing his hand upon his scepter, he said, "The learned Bhishma, the Rishi Drona, and your illustrious self, O Vidura, have all spoken the truth about what is good for me. The Pandavas are certainly my sons and are entitled to the kingdom. Go, O Vidura, and bring them here along with their mother. Bring, too, the celestial beauty Draupadi. By good fortune the Pandavas live. By good fortune they have obtained Drupada's daughter as their wife. By good fortune our strength has now increased, and by good fortune the wicked Parochan is dead." Dhritarashtra dismissed the assembly. Duryodhan and Karna stormed out, closely followed by Dushasan and the other Kaurava princes. Vidura left and made preparations to go immediately to Kampilya, while the blind king was led back to his chambers by his servants. Early the next morning, Vidura departed for the Panchala kingdom. He took with him numerous jewels and various kinds of wealth for Drupada, the Pandavas, and Draupadi. A large contingent from Dhritarashtra's army accompanied him as he made his way along the smooth forest roads. Vidura had heard that Krishna had gone to Kampilya to visit the Pandavas, and he felt excited at the prospect of seeing that all-powerful personality, as well as his beloved nephews. When he arrived at Kampilya, Drupada received him with honor, and the Pandavas were overjoyed to see him. They greeted him with tears in their eyes and touched his feet. The old minister embraced each of the brothers warmly. Krishna then came forward and bowed before Vidura, who embraced him, feeling a surge of ecstatic love. He gazed at Krishna for some moments, and the Yadava smiled affectionately at him. Vidura then offered Draupadi brilliant golden ornaments, studded with diamonds and rubies, and Drupada a heap of shining gems. When they were all seated in Drupada's council chamber, Vidura said, "O king, along with your sons and ministers, please hear the message I bring from Dhritarashtra. He and his sons and ministers have repeatedly asked about your welfare. Your beloved friend Drona has mentally embraced you and sent his warmest greetings. All of the Kuru elders are overjoyed at our new alliance. They feel as if they have acquired a new kingdom. Knowing all this, O sire, please permit the Pandavas to go to Hastinapur. The Kurus long to see them again." Vidura described how much the people in Hastinapur were anxious to see the brothers return with their new bride. He hoped the Pandavas themselves were desiring to again see their old home. Would Draupada allow them to enter their city and state? Draupada smiled. "O wise Vidura, it is surely proper for these boys to return to their ancestral kingdom. But it is not proper for me to tell them to leave. Let them decide for themselves. Let us also consult Krishna, for he is always interested in what is best for the Pandavas." Yudhishthira stepped forward and said that he and his brothers were now dependent upon Drupada. They would do whatever the king commanded. Krishna said, "In my view, the Pandavas should go to Hastinapur, but we should all abide by Drupada's opinion, for the king is learned in all aspects of virtue." Drupada agreed with Krishna. "These princes are now as dear to me as they are to Vasudeva. No one is more their well-wisher than Krishna, and he will only counsel what is for their own good. Let them depart for Hastinapur." Soon they were ready to leave. The Pandavas made their fond farewells to Drupada and his sons. The old king and his wife shed tears as their daughter mounted the chariot with Kunti. They stood with the other Kuru elders outside the palace as the Pandavas proceeded slowly down the royal highway toward the city gate. Krishna went with them on his own splendid golden chariot, and with great pleasure they all journeyed together to Hastinapur. They entered the city like a line of celestials entering Amaravati, Indra's splendid city. The citizens thronged the streets. Everyone longed to see the Pandavas again. They crowded around the brothers as the procession moved slowly along the main road toward Dhritarashtra's palace. The Pandavas could hear the people's exclamations. "The best of men, Yudhisthira, has returned at last. That exalted soul knows the precepts of virtue. He regards us as if we are his nearest relatives. Today it seems that Pandu himself, beloved of the people, has come back from the forest. If we have ever given charity, if we have ever performed sacrifice, if we have any ascetic merits, then let the Pandavas live here for 100 years. The brothers smiled and raised their hands in blessings. Their eyes streamed with tears as they again saw their city and its people. Soon they saw Dhritarashtra and Bhishma, who had come out on the road to meet them. The king and his minister embraced the Pandavas, who in turn greeted their elders with due reverence, touching their feet and bowing before them with folded hands. Yudhisthira then inquired after the welfare of the kingdom and its people, and was told that everything was flourishing. Gradually the party moved into Dhritarashtra's palace. Having been worshipped by the Kuru elders, Krishna followed behind them. Duryodhana's wife, Dushala, met Draupadi and Kunti and accompanied them into Gandhari's quarters. As Gandhari embraced Draupadi, she thought of the prophetic voice that had spoken when Draupadi first stepped out of the fire. It was said that she would be the death of the world's Kshatriyas. The blindfolded queen had developed a powerful inner vision due to her austerities. She could understand that Draupadi was destined to cause her son's destruction. Still, Gandhari felt no malice toward Draupadi. She had resigned herself to the eventuality of fate. Duryodhana was wicked and selfish. His brothers followed him blindly. Surely they shall reap their rightful reward. All-powerful providence controlled everything. Men simply her instruments driven by desire and hate. The queen blessed Draupadi and then warmly greeted her old friend Kunti. In Dhritarashtra's council chamber, the king spoke before the Pandavas in a trembling voice. "It is with joy that I sit here today with Pandu's sons. The gods have surely been merciful to the Kurus, and that these 5 heroic brothers still live. So that no further disputes may arise between us, I want to give the Pandavas half the kingdom. O Yudhisthira, my child, go to Kandavaprastha. This shall be your half of the kingdom. Live there peacefully." Bhishma and Vidura looked at one another but said nothing. Krishna, who was sitting upon a splendid seat of gold and jewels, and who appeared like the sun illuminating the assembly, smiled when he heard the king's proposal. He knew the region the king was so generously offering to the Pandavas. Kandavaprastha was a vast area, and it was certainly half the kingdom, but it was nothing but jungle and desert. There were no cities, not even any settlements. Although it had once been the site of the Kuru's capital, a rishi had long ago cursed that land, when he felt offended by a Kuru king. It was now a wasteland. Yudhisthira looked respectfully at Dhritarashtra. He felt no anger or resentment at the unfairness of the settlement. His elders represented the supreme. Their orders should be followed without question. The prince looked across at Krishna, who was still smiling. Yudhisthira was sure with his assistance they would be able to make the Kandava region habitable again. With palms folded, the Pandava acknowledged Dhritarashtra's gift. It shall be so, my lord. The next day the king arranged for Yudhisthira's coronation. With all pomp and ceremony, the prince became king of Kandavaprastha, with Vyasadeva appearing in time to perform the rituals. After the coronation, the Pandavas arranged to depart. Having worshipped the gods and taken their leave from the Kuru elders, they left with Krishna at the head of their procession. The sage Vyasadeva also accompanied them as they journeyed to the northern region of Kandava. With his assistance, the brothers selected an auspicious tract of land upon which to found a city. He performed the appropriate Vedic rites to invoke the god's presence. Then Krishna sat with the rishi and summoned Indra. The deity appeared, blazing like fire. He bowed before Krishna and asked, "What shall I do for you at this time, my lord?" Krishna asked him to arrange for a city to be constructed for the Pandavas. He told Indra to sprinkle his heavenly nectar across the land so that it would again become rich and fertile. Saying, "So be it," Indra called for Vishvakarma, the architect of the gods. After being instructed by Indra, he began work on the city. All around the site, granite walls rose to the skies. Vishvakarma constructed white palaces and mansions, whose windows looked like the divine eagle Garuda's outstretched wings. The city was protected by massive dark gates that resemble clouds. No weapon could assail them. Deadly darts and other missiles were placed along the tops of the defensive ramparts. The turrets were filled with powerful men, all highly trained in warfare, and with all weapons at their disposal. The city was then surrounded by delightful woods, full of blossoming and fragrant trees. Everywhere were lakes crowded with swans and lotus flowers. The streets were wide and well designed, with pleasant groves and gardens between them. Pleasure houses stood in the vast public concourses, and there were countless temples dedicated to Vishnu and the heavenly deities. The Pandava's own palace appeared like the heavenly Mount Meru. Full of every opulence, it stood in the center of the city, surrounded by garrisons of warriors. Soon Brahmins began to be attracted to the city, which had become known as Indraprastha. They opened institutions wherein they taught all the Vedic sciences. Vaishyas began to arrive, hoping to earn money by selling their goods. Gradually craftsmen and artisans arrived, and within a short time the city was populated with pious citizens. It resembled Amaravati in the heavens. Being ruled with justice and compassion by Yudhisthira and his brothers, Indraprastha's people had everything they desired. They came to regard the Pandavas as affectionate fathers. Out of friendship for the Pandavas, Krishna remained in the city for some days. Arjuna and Krishna were especially close, and they spent much time together. Draupadi would take every opportunity to serve Krishna, and she became very dear to him. A few days after Krishna's departure, the celestial seer Narada came to Indraprastha. Seeing the well-known rishi dressed in a black deerskin and with his golden hair knotted on his head, Yudhisthira got off his throne and offered his obeisances. He then presented Narada with a fine golden seat encrusted with jewels and personally offered him the sacred argya. King Yudhisthira washed the rishi's feet and welcomed him with gentle words. At Yudhisthira's command, Draupadi came before the sage and stood with folded palms. Narada offered the beautiful queen blessings and then dismissed her. When Draupadi had returned to her quarters, Narada said, "The illustrious princess is the wedded wife of all of you. You must establish a rule so that no dissension may arise between you over her. Listen as I tell you the ancient history of two celebrated asuras named Sunda and Upasunda. The two asuras belong to the powerful race of Danavas, the celestial demons. Both were the sons of Nikumbha, a deadly enemy of the gods. The brothers were like one person divided into two. They lived together, ate together, and moved about together. They always entertained the same purpose and were always equal to one another in both happiness and distress. By virtue of their long practice of rigid austerities, Sunda and Upasunda became extremely powerful. Having received a boon from Brahma that they could only die at each other's hands, they felt free to terrorize the universe. The gods could not check them. Finally, Brahma devised a way to destroy them. He created a woman of indescribable beauty, who he named Tilotatma. On Brahma's order, this apsara went before the two brothers one day when they were both intoxicated. Seeing her faultless form moving gracefully before them, both brothers immediately desired her. They began to argue, "This woman shall be my wife and your sister." "No, brother, I saw her first. She is mine." The argument became heated, and soon they fell upon one another with their fierce weapons. At last they simultaneously smashed one another with their huge clubs, and both fell to the ground dead. Narada concluded, "Thus those two asuras, although ever united and inspired with the same desires, killed one another for the sake of a woman. You should make arrangements so that no such quarrel may arise among yourselves." The Pandavas consulted one another in the Rishi's presence. Finally, they agreed that they would each spend a certain amount of time with Draupadi. If any of them saw another when he was alone with her, there would be a severe consequence. The offender would have to go to the forest for 1 year and have no contact with Draupadi during that time. After the Pandavas made this rule, Narada took his leave, disappearing before their eyes. Carefully keeping their agreement, the brothers continued to live peacefully at Indraprastha.